You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Timothy Glenn. Timothy is an author, astrologer, numerologist, and spiritual reader. He came into this life without the veils pulled all the way down, and like many of us, he never fit into the real world. Early years include music, voice, and exposure to astrology. Theatrical training and performance prepared him for a brief stint as a minister. He has done past life regression, sound healing, astrology, and now does multidimensional soul purpose readings. You can find out more on his website at www.soulpurposereadings.com. So let's welcome Timothy back to the show now. Hi, Tim. How are you?
Well, I'm sort of cruising through the middle of the insanity.
Well, I suppose it's better to be in the middle of it than on the other ends.
Right. You may have noticed that there is a bit of insanity on the planet.
Well, I have, but then I never know if my perception is similar to others. So let's see what you are seeing and perceiving about the insanity.
Well, the whole old world reality is becoming unraveled within us and all around us, and some people are just having a little bit of a hard time with that and acting out in all kinds of strange ways. And, of course, we just had this wild political circus that hasn't really ended here in the States, and that's providing a lot of entertainment for those of us who are a little more detached. And, we could go on and on and on about all that. It's a pretty wild ride right now.
Yes, no kidding.
But, since last we talked, which was last March, actually you and I have talked, we just haven't done it on the show.
Right.
The thing we talked about quite a bit last time was the approach of this other set of celestial bodies, this little mini solar system is coming in, sometimes known as the Wormwood system or the Nemesis system.
Yes.
Yeah. And so there are those of us who are continuing to track the progress of this.
Ah. Well, where is it supposed to be now? Because I've followed up some of those leads, and there does appear to be a number of people that are quite serious and have done extensive research on this. And yet it's not obviously in the mainstream. It's not even much in the alternative New Age stuff.
Right. Of course, you're not going to see it in mainstream.
Right.
They will conceal it until the last possible moment. And then they'll spin some crazy stories about it and won't let you know the real facts.
You're right.
Which the system has known all along.
Right.
And it's up to people on the outside to use their equipment, which isn't quite up to the standard of the system, because they've got the real cool technology.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, hundreds of years advanced.
Yeah. But the amateur astronomers are getting all kinds of great captures. And let's just say we are seeing celestial bodies in the sky that don't fit into the model of the solar system as we have known it.
Well, that's going to be quite a shock, isn't it, when that starts to become obvious and they can't be denied?
Well, that'll be interesting to see how the game is played on this planet. But with these other celestial bodies coming into the central part of the solar system here, you might imagine that we would see a lot of things like planets reacting with, look, for example, our planet. Oh, let's see, more earthquakes, more volcanoes, more this, more that, more the other thing. and more people going insane.
Oh, well, that seems to be happening for sure.
Yes, and, you know, the Earth is also tilted.
Yeah.
A bit farther than it usually has been in magnetic north. Last I knew it was in Siberia. Yeah, so that kind of stuff is going pretty wild, and other planets are now, quote-unquote, off-tilt, and the sun has been going a little wild as well. So there is, of course, a lot of electromagnetic interaction amongst the celestial bodies, and, you know, we think of our regular astrology that we've known, and we understand how just the planets forming different angles produce really noticeable effects on our planet and in our lives and in our psyches. Mm-hmm. Well, imagine you get a whole new set. You get a brown dwarf star surrounded by several planets and moons and asteroids and whatever else.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that'll be...
yes, well, especially as it goes... just refresh my memory on this, because I'm not well-versed on the path and the time frame of that path as it comes in and where it goes through, you know, between Earth and this planet. What's it supposed to do?
Okay, well, it approaches our solar system because it is actually connected to our solar system. But being smaller, it gets flung way out on this wide elliptical orbit and only comes into the central part of the solar system every 3,600 years.
Mm.
And it approaches not along our ecliptic, but from below it. So it comes up, about a 30-degree angle from below us, and it comes up over through the ecliptic between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. Now, between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter, we have this thing called the asteroid belt.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the ancient Sumerian writings, there used to be a planet out there.
Was that Tiamat?
Tiamat. Right, very good. Oh, 5 points for Gryffindor. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, Tiamat was there. Yeah, and now it's just a bunch of rocks.
not too pretty, too.
Yeah, okay.
Well, there could be things on those rocks, like, you know, what's-his-face flew his little ship underneath there. Remember in the Star Wars series?
Oh, yeah.
There could be all kinds of weird things hanging out in the asteroid belt.
Yeah, it's to the point that what would surprise us now?
Right. Not much for me.
Yeah, right.
It would surprise me if the government and the world started telling the truth about what they knew.
Now, that would surprise me. Yeah. In fact, that might even qualify as a shock.
Yeah. That would be a shockeroo.
Yes. Okay. And, well, we can save our comments on the mainstream media for a little later.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, it comes up right where the asteroid belt is, where Tiamat used to be.
Huh.
And it loops up over the sun, and as it comes up over the sun, it is pulled in closer to the sun, so when it comes back down through the ecliptic heading southward again, it comes down between the orbits of Earth and Venus. So that's where we get into real action. So it's been affecting things in the solar system for years, and people can explain it away different ways, or like most people, they can just try to ignore it. That's all right. That's their game.
Right.
And, you know, they're the ones taking the blue pill.
Right.
Okay, but we're red pill people, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. We're totally red pill. All right. Now, for those red pill people out there, get ready. Because when this thing comes down over through the ecliptic again, it's between Earth and Venus, imagine how the electromagnetic interplay will be with Earth and this entire system. And, you know, if you read through the prophecies, it indicates that we're going to get a pretty close flyby this time.
Oh.
And we will have some fun rock and roll.
Wow. Well, so I would guess that something that large with a surrounding, accoutrement would create something like tidal waves and volcanoes and earthquakes and things like that.
Right. In fact, last time when we talked on the show, I did share a couple dreams that I had had about the tsunamis. But with, you know, when things are really like going wild on the planet here, and you shared one as well.
Yes, I've had one. I've had one too, and it was in two places. And
A Mediterranean Sea. You saw it sneaking up like to Jerusalem, and you also saw it hitting L.A.
Yes, that was it. And boy, it was huge, and it washed away the sand around the pyramids, and underneath there was some very interesting stuff that we can't see, you know, since the sand is there.
But, yeah, although you can take it for granted other people have dug down there and they know exactly what's down there.
Oh, yeah. There's probably not much that isn't known by now.
Yeah.
And the secrets that are held so closely are just so numerous now that it's like we're living in different worlds. You know, the facade stays up on this one, but the real world is rapidly changing technologically, and there's a breakaway civilization, which people know about, and there probably has been a breakaway civilization for a long time now. And there have always been aliens here. They never left.
Well,
quote unquote
aliens are the ones who seeded life on this planet.
Right, exactly. And it wouldn't surprise me that they considered this their property.
Well, in fact, they do. In fact, they regard this as their farm. And
we're the cattle and the sheep and the chickens. I don't know which one I am, but
yes. Now remember, you had recommended the film Jupiter Ascending.
Yes.
You mentioned it a couple times. Well, I did watch it.
Oh, and, what'd you think?
Yeah, really. Oh, way cool. And once again, a really cool metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
We are just one of many, many farms owned by this, you know, galactic consortium.
That's right.
Intergalactic consortium.
Intergalactic, yes. And you were the first person that I know of that brought it to my attention that the Matrix, which is the artificially, intelligently, quote-unquote, controlled web of cameras and technologies and weaponry and consciousness-changing stuff and all of that, which is intergalactic, is used to control nine dimensions of the Matrix. So that's a lot of dimensions to handle, and so it's intergalactic and would have to be able to move in and out of time, and time wouldn't be anything to it. And so,
linear time is its own creation.
Is its own creation, exactly, as would matter be, I would think, if that matters.
If it matters, right. Back to that movie, which was a lot of fun and a cool metaphor. And actually, one of my favorite parts of that film was when Jupiter herself was getting all the bureaucratic stuff done so she could actually own the Earth.
Yeah.
Yes. And dealing with all the bureaucrats there. And the last bureaucrat was that eccentric character was played by another eccentric character, an Earthling named Terry Gilliam. Well, he was a riot in that thing.
And
remember, when it was completely finished, he congratulated her and then said, "And my sincerest or deepest condolences."
Right.
You now own the Earth. Yeah, but
right.
Recently, you sent out a link, and it was to our friend Carla Fox's blog. She was talking about how we're approaching this, maybe dangerous point here of achieving this hive mind on planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we know that's what the artificial intelligence wants.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, and he's not the only one to say that.
Oh, no, no, not at all.
George Cavassilis, my old friend, who wrote Our Universal Journey, mm-hmm. he recently, about a week ago, I think, wrote a blog about it and said that he was perceiving that we were being pushed into a hive mind.
Right. And Carla made a very interesting observation about that, because she was talking about what she called an energy extraction process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she talked about how it's going on with individuals all over the planet,
mm-hmm.
and has been for a long time. But just imagine what it would be like if we get to the point that the human consciousness is stuck in the hive mind. She said, you know, just imagine what kind of energy the hive could generate.
Oh, yeah.
And then she said it would be a very valuable commodity for those
uh-huh.
looking to use us in this way.
yes, and we know how everything operates. Everything is a commodity. And
in the Matrix, yes.
In the Matrix, right, not outside the Matrix.
Yeah. So, and you'd asked about timeline, and we had talked a little bit about that last time on the show. In fact, I did mention a couple things. I mentioned an interview that Bob Dean had done with Kerry Cassidy back in 2008 for Project Camelot, and Bob Dean had said, by the end of 2017, and you can take that to the bank.
Ooh. Well,
yeah.
Since I don't trust the banks.
<don't>. Yeah.
Although the banks trust the banks, they certainly enjoy taking our money, don't they?
Well, it's their creation.
Yes, right.
Eventually, we will evolve beyond all of that. The Proterians have always said that any planet that has any form of economy is a world steeped in fear.
Oh.
It's the only reason you have an economy, is people are afraid that they won't be able to get their share.
Yeah, yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
Okay,
go ahead.
Okay, and in the last show, not only did I mention the Bob Dean thing, but also the Proterians, that they had said that as we approach the alignment at the end of 2012, once we come within about 5 years of it, it's like entering what we call in astrology orb of influence, and the energies would build, and go over that point, and then there would be about 5 years on the other side before the real shift happened. Well, that would take us up to the end of 2017.
Mm.
Okay. Now, another one that I didn't mention was a guy known as Father Malachi Martin.
Oh, yes.
Okay, yeah. And mm-hmm. in the late 90s, he was on with Art Bell several times.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1998, he's on with Art Bell, and he had talked a lot about, you know, being able to read the third secret of Fatima and blah, blah, blah. And Art Bell was pressing him on a time frame. And Malachi Martin had said, we will not have to wait 200 years to see this. We will not have to wait 100 years to see this. In fact, we will not have to wait 20 years to see this.
Wow.
Now, in 1998, he's saying we will not have to wait 20 years to see this. That sounds like 2017.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does,
as Bob
it?
Dean, as Bob Dean said, by the end of 2017. And also, there's a researcher named David Mead who did some interesting research. He is a Christian and very much into the Book of Revelation.
Oh.
And in the 12th Book of Revelation, you know, when it's really in the fan for planet Earth now, and things really start happening, there is a specific alignment described in the constellation of Virgo, involving the sun, the moon, and three planets. And so he got onto Stellarium.com, and he thought he would go back in history to see what had happened on Earth at other times when this alignment had occurred.
Oh.
And he went back 6,000 years, and it had never occurred.
Oh, huh.
Yeah, and then he went forward 1,000 years, and the only time this specific alignment occurs is, and since it involves the moon, we're going to have a specific day because within hours it's gone elsewhere, It's September 23rd of 2017.
Wow. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, the moon is said to have been brought in here or dragged in or moved here, that it wasn't always here.
Well, that's true. It's an artificial orb that was placed in an artificial orbit around the planet to keep human emotions within certain parameters, and that sets up the programming for the Earth matrix in the human experience here. And as you've noted before, because of your friend Gurdjieff, it is also used as the recycle bin.
That's right.
The recycling department, because when these souls come out of their bodies at death here, they go to the light and all that stuff, and they go through the tunnel, and they get sucked into the moon. It's actually the moon.
Yep.
And the thing is, once they get in there, you know, they put on whatever kind of show they want to put on for these Earthlings, and they can mock up anybody, you know, people you knew before.
Oh, yeah.
Or if you think it's supposed to be Jesus or Buddha or Muhammad or whoever's supposed to be waiting for you, they'll be there.
Yep.
And eventually you get sucked into this thing called a life review.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens
And if
then?
You're having a life review, you better think to yourself, uh-oh.
Because you're just getting programmed to get stuck right back in the Earth matrix.
That's it.
And get your memory wiped out on the way back in.
Yes. Well, they're kind enough to do that.
Oh, yeah. That's wonderful, isn't it?
No, they're so nice. Well, it is also I've heard through, I think it was the Lear, John Lear, or the son of the guy who started the Learjet, there was a long show that talked about what's going on the opposite side of the moon, and he described it as being a kind of Earth-like on the other side, and that the corporations had been mining it for years, and that there were these huge, moving land movers, you know, that were digging into the Earth and just spewing it out, and you know, the Earth on the moon, and that there were, you know, that there was greenery and there was water and stuff like that on that side, and that there was also something interesting, an alien base with grays and some kind of strange totem or, what do you call it, obelisk.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, they were warned to stay away from it, and they do, of course, because they're looking for money. They don't care what they're up to. But somebody was able to get the information that the Greys were harvesting the body, the elements of the body that were trying to escape the solar system. And they said, well, every once in a while we catch a few souls. They said they couldn't help it. So it's quite possible that that is the station itself where the Greys, and they have the ability to do all of those things because they're masters at implants and creating illusion and reading minds. They're a highly telepathic group, hive mind, there you go. And it's quite possible that that's their task at that station to, you know, to have fun setting up the stage show for us. After all, Earth is a big show, and all of the false flags are all put on, and they're, you know, false. And just about everything we see on the planet is some kind of show. And I think Shakespeare said it, you know, that all the world's a stage, and he might have been meaning it literally.
Well, yes, and the men and women are the players.
Players, exactly.
Yep, that's for sure.
And the only difference would be if we were conscious of playing a role as we were playing it. That's the only thing I can think of that would make a big difference is whether you were aware, self-aware, in the role that you chose to play.
Lance, wow, awareness, consciousness, gee, you think it might make a difference?
Well, you think so. I don't know, since I'm not a conscious being, but...
Hey, come on. Take that red pill.
Well, maybe a little more conscious than most, but not fully conscious. You know,
well,
Gurdjieff said that there were stages.
We're getting there.
And,
we are
you know, so there there may be degrees of consciousness that we can achieve, but well, not in a technologically controlled society where we're meat and food.
But we are not that. That's the illusion.
Right.
If we buy into the illusion, then, yeah, that's what we are. But
right.
There are those of us who are waking up and realizing that's not reality with a capital R. That's the matrix with a small m.
Right.
We're done. We don't do this anymore.
Right.
And we're coming to one of these junctures where we really can make a huge shift out of this. And it's going to be fun and exciting. And
people keep saying that. And I'm waiting for the fun and excitement to show up.
And when it does, you might not think it's so much fun.
Right.
We'll see what happens. But now I did have, since we talked, a couple more of these interesting dreams regarding that wormwood system or nemesis system coming in. Now, last time when we had talked on the show, I had mentioned that I did remote viewing on it.
All right.
And so I got to see it in a dream. In fact, I had two dreams, like just days apart here in July. And in the first of the dreams, there were lots of us, well, hundreds of us at least, scattered around on the hillsides here in the Reno area. And the lighting of the planet was very strange because actually a lot of these descriptions in the prophecies and a lot of what some of the scientists are saying now is that the Nemesis system will eclipse the sun.
Relate to the 3 days of darkness.
Right, yeah. Now, so it was interesting lighting, to say the least. It wasn't, definitely not daytime, but it wasn't like really deep nighttime. It wasn't like twilight or dawn or anything we've ever seen. So the lighting was just very strange, but very dim. And those of us who were standing on the hillsides were in a state of great anticipation because we knew we were going to get a flyby and we were actually going to be able to see the outermost planet of that system, a planet known as Nibiru.
Right.
And so eventually then it came by, and it flew from horizon to horizon about the speed that an airplane would go by.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah, which is actually pretty fast.
It is pretty fast.
Yeah. And the thing was like really, really big, but it's not its own light source, so it was just kind of like this grayish thing there in the sky, this huge orb. But if you would imagine the moon as big as you've ever seen it, multiply it by about 100 times that size.
Wow.
It was just freaking huge in the sky.
Wow.
And as it went by, the Earth was just vibrating. It wasn't like earthquake where we were, but it was just, and the sound was incredible. Like, of course you've never heard sound like that. But
right.
With the whole planet shaking and vibrating and this thing going across the sky. It was amazing.
Wow.
And so that was an interesting dream. And after it had gone past, the general consensus of opinion was, well, that was the shot over the bow. get ready.
Right. Well, especially if the Nibirans have been here all along, and that's their planet, and their race is on it or in it. It seems to me like there would be some kind of happening going on.
Some kind of interaction on that level, too.
You would think.
Yeah, especially with some of the input we've been getting from various sources. The Anunnaki, or Nibiruans, or whatever we want to call them, don't seem to be any more united now than they were back in the times of the Sumerian writings. And there are those who realized they really screwed things up here, and they are connected with this in the Matrix game here, and so they would like to help help the humans out. Others say, oh, the hell with them, let them die.
Right.
So right. we'll see how this all plays out.
Right. Well, since everything is entangled and interconnected, then what is done to us or with us has great implications everywhere.
And we are their progeny.
Right.
Remember, let us make man in our image,
after our likeness.
They spliced their DNA into the earthlings.
Right. So if they let us go, they're killing themselves, basically.
Yeah. That's not a smart thing to do.
No.
Yeah. So at any rate, my dream that I had like just a few nights later after that flyby on the hillside, I was with maybe 20 or 30 other earthlings, and there was a handful of ETs.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't the Protarians. They seemed like they could have been Pleiadians or whatever. They were like very tall and healthy-looking humans. And we got to go into this big saucer.
Mm.
We're going to go for a ride in a flying saucer because they were going to show us the Nemesis system.
Uh-huh.
So we could get a really good view of it. And it was funny because we were, you know, the Earthling, you know, gang. We were like a bunch of little kids, you know, getting to go on an amusement park ride. You know, this was
right.
Exciting. And, you know, we're like, oh, boy. And it was just your classic flying saucer, and it had, you know, like the clear bubble over it because it was like a sightseeing craft. It was really cool.
Oh.
And we just, you know, smooth anti-gravity just right up through the atmosphere and out there. And the angle they gave us to view the Nemesis system was amazing. And if I thought I had been, like, blown away by the previous dream, no. This is what really blew me away.
Huh.
Because we were looking at it from a different angle than I had seen it when I did a remote viewing. Because I came in on its ecliptic. Here we were completely above the ecliptic with our sun shining on it.
Wow.
So,
interesting, right.
Yeah. And so you know what it's like when you look just after the sun has barely gone over the hills and you can see maybe Jupiter or Venus or Mercury there when they're really bright in the dim sky?
Yeah.
Okay, it was all lit up like that. So you could see Nemesis itself, you could see Nibiru, you could see the other planets, you could see their moons and their asteroids. It was all lit up like that. And what blew me away was I didn't realize how many celestial bodies there are in that system. It's a pretty busy place.
Yeah. And they weren't flat?
None of them looked flat. And neither did the sun. And what? And, of course, once you're up there above the Earth, it doesn't look flat either.
Right, right. Well, the classic flying saucer shape is the shape of a galaxy.
Yep.
So it kind of makes sense that, you know, it would be formed in a galaxy may indeed be a flying saucer of
there
some
you go.
Sort. You know, our two galaxies, Andromeda and... And the one we're in are supposed to be dancing, and they're supposed to cross through each other. And how that could be affecting us when that happens, I have no idea. But I mean, can you imagine all of the solar systems and planets and so on and so forth in Andromeda, and all of them in our system, going passing through each other? I mean, that would be quite a dance, wouldn't it?
Oh, my God, yeah. So take that red pill.
Yeah. Yeah, before it's too late.
Yeah, if you're going to take the blue pill, man, you're going to be too numbed out to understand what's going on.
Yep.
So we've got exciting stuff coming.
Yeah, and I think you're right about the timing, because 2017 would be... It just seems to be a time that is just far enough behind 2012 to be within the window and a likely time when things would come to a head.
Yeah, and you might recall in the last show when we were talking about 2017, you mentioned that our good friend Anelia Benz.
Oh, yeah.
Remember what you said about that?
What did I say?
well,
she had made an agreement to continue teaching and sharing her information until 2017.
Until 2017, yes.
And, you know, I pretty much had decided to join her in that commitment, in the sense that I didn't want to be here beyond 2017 unless there was something really fascinating going on.
Right.
I didn't want to be here today, but but I'm here, so, you know, I might as well make the best of it.
Yeah. Now, one of the cute little things I like to say is, well, when we get to that certain point, here won't be here anymore.
Oh, yes, right.
So we'll see how it all works out. But, you know, it's a wild ride.
And well,
I've got
it certainly
no interest
seems
in
that way.
Yeah, and I've got no interest in that blue pill.
Oh, me neither. None whatsoever. Although, you know, it seems that the Matrix keeps trying to force that blue pill on everybody with all of the things that are going on with fluoride and the blah, 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 chemtrails and nanotechnology and, you know, technologies that change consciousness and dampen it and all that stuff. But it doesn't seem to be working as well as they would like it to work.
Well, no. Inelia had once said a couple years ago that the physical bodies were refusing to cooperate.
Well, at least they're smart enough to figure that much out.
Right. You know, and the thing is, if you're aware and your mind is refusing to cooperate and your soul has no interest in cooperating and your heart says, no, I'm not cooperating, and your physical body itself is refusing to cooperate, the Matrix is going to have a hard time keeping you in its trap.
That's right. And one time I think I asked, maybe it was I asked Amelia why some of the false flags that were happening, why the people weren't actually being killed. In other words, let's just say that one of them involves a school shooting, for instance. And
yeah, like nobody died at Sandy Hook, right?
Right. And one of my guests, Jay Widener, came on the show after having lost his laptop and was just, he was beside himself at having discovered that all of these things were just stage acts. And it was quite an interesting show. I mean, the archives go back 10 plus years of my show. And if you go back and look for that Jay Widener show, the last one we did together, it's really quite a stupendous revelation. I mean, he's always been one to look to the esoteric side, and that's quite a good show.
Yeah, I remember listening to it a few times. It was really excellent.
Yeah.
And you know, it's really interesting that now, how accurate do you think the FBI is on keeping like murder statistics? Are they fairly good at keeping stats?
I would think so.
Okay, well, guess what? According to the FBI statistics, Sandy Hook had, or you know, Newton had a murder rate of zero for the entire year of 2012.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah, FBI does not have a single murder on record.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Year. Yeah.
That's a good Johnny Carson line. I did not know.
Yeah, so isn't that interesting? And if people really want to get into the nitty-gritty of it, Professor James Fetzer, has a book called Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. And he's got a whole bunch of stuff. You can find him on YouTube or wherever, and he really lays it all out. It was totally faked.
Right. Well, I'm convinced for sure because I've had, I've had several guests that have talked about it, and one had been researching this for 30 years. So I'll find his name. I'll think of his name before the show ends, hopefully. But he's from the Icelandic area.
Oh, Dola Damagard?
Ole Damagard.
Ole Damagard, that's the guy, yeah. Oh, he's done great.
And he has a wonderful website called lightonconspiracies.com, and he was just awarded some kind of prize for his work. So, you know, that was kind of surprising.
Yeah. But in this world, so much is so fake. And also, some people have pointed out that the reason they're doing the staged stuff is, well, it's two-pronged. One is they have to have the acquiescence of the souls in order to kill them. They have to have some degree of agreement there.
Right.
And also, they realized after 9/11, if you actually kill people, it creates a mess that doesn't go away because you have grieving families who want answers.
Oh, yes. Yes, I hadn't thought of that one.
Yeah, and they never give up.
Yes, well, let's hope not.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, they do the fake stuff. Orlando was fake as well.
That's not surprising.
It was all staged. Yeah, cause, and the thing is, you get to the point, you recognize the crisis actors.
Right. It's funny that they use some of the same people.
They do.
Yeah, they go from place to place, and the same photographic equipment, which Ollie goes into in his shows,
mm-hmm.
and the same technique, same style. So it must be, when you think about how much it takes to make a film production, it must be billions and trillions of dollars worth of energy going into these things.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, what a waste of money.
Well, the system doesn't care.
Well, of course not.
Because the system, it creates the money.
Yeah, that's
out of thin air.
Out of thin air, yes, exactly.
In fact, most of what they call money is nothing but entries into databases.
Right. And there's so many
talk about
zeros.
Illusion.
So many zeros now on everything that they have these little electronic devices that they use to keep track of all of the money, the debt that's out there.
Yeah, so it's the same old game, and it's getting more ridiculous as we go. And, of course, the system they're running is not sustainable. It doesn't have to be because it doesn't have to last much longer because it wouldn't anyway.
It doesn't seem like it, but it does seem that from the perspective of AI that it is quite full of self-preservation.
Yep.
That it will do anything to keep from being seen and from dying in the sense that it's no longer running the show.
Right. It doesn't want anybody to turn it off. Yeah, the AI will do whatever it takes to keep its own self functioning. It
mm-hmm.
needs to keep the program running.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
aren't cyborgs one of the recent things that is being talked about quite a bit?
Yeah, the term Borg gets thrown around in fun ways. Like our friend Laura Bruno, who was on the show recently with you.
Right.
Laura was on a few weeks ago with you, and she's one who loves to use the term Borg, and she often refers to the New Age Borg.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Because, you know, like the New Age fluff bunnies and all these people who are caught up in a cute set of illusions, it's still a set of illusions, and they are like moving into the hive mind, thinking they're doing something different.
Yes.
But the Borg, if people are not familiar with the term, we got that from Star Trek.
That was a wonderful part of the series, I think. It was quite frightening, really, when Captain Picard was consumed by the Borg.
Right.
And then Data got it, too.
We will assimilate you.
Yeah.
And it was artificial intelligence that was absorbing or assimilating all life.
All life, yeah.
Yeah. So, again, it was just another metaphor they were giving us.
Yep.
Because there is that big AI in the sky. Because really,
right.
You know, what people still think of as the universe is really a projected hologram.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we refer to that as the cosmic matrix. And that's what, you know, the Portarians say is a nine-dimensional intergalactic matrix.
Mm-hmm.
And people think they can escape the matrix by just dying.
Right.
Think again. Yeah. And people also can really go beyond the Earth matrix, but they're in a larger matrix, and then, you know, because the solar system itself has its own matrix, the galaxy is a matrix, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a little bit to go beyond, except you don't need to think in terms of going beyond. It's simply seeing through its illusions and understanding. It's just, as you referred to it earlier, as a synthetic overlay that prevents us from perceiving the natural universe as it actually exists. And once we are able to perceive the natural universe as it really exists and understand our own true nature, then we can simply tune out the matrix programming. So we don't have to fight it. We don't have to struggle against it, escape from it, or anything like that. And you may recall this guy, the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. Remember
yes,
him?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Long
he taught the Beatles,
dude, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I have a couple friends who studied right with him for years.
Oh.
And they said that when he was teaching transcendental meditation, he would emphasize the transcendental part of it. And he would say that if you're trying to escape from this reality or break out of it, then what you're doing is making it real.
Yes,
feeding energy into it. So what you do in transcending it is simply become completely neutral so that you render it irrelevant.
Right. That makes
and
a lot
so
of
that's
sense.
What we yes, that's what we will be doing with the Earth matrix, the solar system matrix, the galactic matrix, the various levels of intergalactic matrices, etc., all the way to the universal matrix or the cosmic matrix. Just tune it out because it's irrelevant.
We come
to the point we know it's just illusion.
Yep, and the thing about it is that what you resist persists.
Minor detail. That was Carl Gustav Jung who came up with that one.
Oh, good. Well, at least he was a pretty smart fellow. He came up with a lot of different things, didn't he?
He was cool.
Yeah.
Yes. What you resist persists. Another way we can word that is if you fight it, you feed it.
Yes, indeed. Indeed, and that's why so much is pumped out into the into our lives that is fear content, because it creates a resistance to it.
Yes, and with the political circus, in the political circus we've just witnessed here in the United States, I mean, just look at the fear that was whipped up. Oh my God, that was pretty off the charts.
Well, to be honest, I mean, I go back to the year 1950, and it seems like to me that the political circus has become more more obviously Three Stooge-like. I mean, it just doesn't seem real. And yet, I see people taking it very seriously. Like, you know, this is real, and it's really a comedy of errors. And I've never seen anything so ridiculous in all my life. And I don't pay any attention to it, but it's still, you know, it's still somewhere hovering in the ether. But not to change the subject, but I don't like political stuff too much. Did you hear about the new movie Arrival?
No, I have not.
Ah, well, there's a movie that just come out, and you know how Hollywood is used as a way, as a means of soft disclosure, or even medium hard disclosure, actually.
Yeah.
If you go back to a lot of the science fiction movies, you can see how most of them have become true. To some extent, or are coming true, but this one is a very interesting one, written by somebody from Microsoft who writes short stories. And it's about an alien craft that comes to Earth, and they don't know how to communicate with these entities. And they're not human, and they're not alien. They're like a squid or something. And so somebody becomes the, you know, the hero. It's a woman, thank goodness. And she doesn't know anything about ETs or UFOs, but she goes off with a bumbling tech-geared military intelligence to meet the aliens, and she happens to have empathic or psychic abilities. So she becomes the contact or the connection who can understand these strange ink things that are projected onto the glass wall but that keeps them inside. And it's supposed to be quite an interesting, there's a lot of talk about it. So I haven't seen it yet, but it's getting quite a bit of coverage in the exoconsciousness movement and in people that are interested in disclosure, which I've been told is on its way. It's coming soon to a, and not to a theater near you, but to the world.
And watch how the media and the government, well, it's not the same thing, watch how the system spins it. You know, you can have disclosure going on, but just like, you know, with the election going on here, look at how they spun stories left and right. I mean, that's all they do. And for people who are really still caught up in that and all bunged up about it and so forth, I noticed that here in Reno, somebody was putting on a workshop at one of these spiritual centers, and it was called Deprogramming Political Energy. And I don't know exactly how they're going about it, but that's a pretty good idea, folks. And one thing you could do is just turn off those televisions.
Right. Right. You know,
when
great idea.
Right. You know, I had the veil lifted on the illusions of the political system when I was 15 years old.
Wow.
And then by the time I was 17, I came to the conclusion that television was a weapon being used for social engineering by beings who did not have our best interests at heart.
Wow.
And I determined then, and that was 50 years ago, Lance.
Wow.
Half a century ago, and I have still never owned one of those damn machines, and I'm not going to own one of those damn machines.
Wow, I'm impressed. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah. I had
you've gone up a few notches in my esteem ranking.
Oh, okay, cool. Thank you. Yeah, you know, when I was in 10th grade, when my eyes opened, I had a terrific English teacher. That, you know, most people can go back and read most of the stuff that I read, but they did not have the advantage of having Jane Church as a 10th grade English teacher. Hmm. She really opened our eyes to a lot of things, especially about television. She was talking about how in the labs, even in the 50s, they were experimenting with flicker rates and how to get people into alpha states so that they could be programmed to buy things that were being advertised and to believe things, etc.
Yep.
And also, back then, in 10th grade English, 1984 by George Orwell and Brave
Right.
New World by Aldous Huxley were required reading.
Ah.
And when you have those books being interpreted by Jane Church, it's like, whoa! And it just happens that year there was a paperback book released called None Dare Call It Treason by John A. Stormer, and my paternal grandmother made sure I got a copy of that. Because she said, you're going to read this, and you're going to read about these people and their plans. And the reason I'm giving you this book is because I want you to understand what's really going on in this world.
Wow.
Because by the time you're going to read about these people and their plans, and by the time their plans come to fruition, I'm going to be dead and gone, but you're still going to be here, and
wow,
you're going to have to deal with this. Yeah,
my
so
goodness.
Grandma pulled through, yeah. And then you read the old book Propaganda by Edward Bernays.
Okay, I haven't read that one, but...
Oh, okay. Well, that's older. Edward Bernays was a nephew of a fairly famous guy named Sigmund Freud.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So read Propaganda if you just want to be horrified. Look back over the 20th century and the media, and oh, God, it's brutal. Anyway, also in 1966, there was a book published by Dr. Carol Quigley called Tragedy and Hope.
Oh, that is a must read.
Yes, and make sure you get the original 1966 edition, because remember that the feds went right into McMillan and destroyed the plates.
Oh, yes.
Because
yes,
he was
the same FBI people that had zero kills in Sandy Hook. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, and, so, and that was written by Carol Quigley?
Yeah, Carol Quigley, yeah.
Yeah.
And there, okay, now there's a company called GSG Publishing, and they did a reprint of it in 2004, and that is the original, because then they had to come out with some sanitized, deodorized edition that was like only about half the book. But, you know, I used to walk around with my nice, big, fat copy of Tragedy and Hope, and in 1971 then, there was a book published called None Dare Call It Conspiracy, by Gary Allen, and I was spent months going to the libraries and looking up all of the references and so forth, making sure that the documentation was correct. And it was like, oh my God, this is real. So I ordered a case of that book.
Oh.
And so I was walking around with a couple copies of that and my big copy of Tragedy and Hope, just trying maybe to wake some people up.
Wow. Well, and you're still doing it, Mr. Pretarian.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we're just about at the end of the show. And so if there's another, if there's any other book references or anything you'd like to mention at the end of the show, I would encourage you to do that because, you know, there are people out there who are still, you know, looking up these things. And I just want to put in a plug for you that you give the best sole purpose readings that I have ever had. You did one recently for me, which was just excellent. And so if anybody's looking for a reading out there, this is the guy to get one from because he does a lot of research and he has some methods that go back to, what was it, the time of...
Pythagoras.
Pythagoras. And it's I've never known anybody that has known about the Pythagorean numerological system that you use, that you weave into your readings. And it's obscure and it's a very interesting material. So... I highly recommend that people get you to give them a reading.
Well, thank you. In fact, I was using that Pythagorean numerology as well as the astrology to predict that Trump was going to win the election here. I was one of the few astrologers who predicted that.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah, the majority of them were predicting Hillary Clinton, but I took one look at, first of all, for the astrologers out there who are still confused, go to the secondary progressions. You look at Donald Trump's secondary progression chart, that's a done deal. And also, I'll just say that in the Pythagorean numerology, there's the name progression, which has a correspondence to the secondary progression in astrology, and it was just as powerful there for him. So
I figured
that was just a done deal, yeah.
Well, Tim, thank you again for coming back. It's always interesting and fun to talk to you, and I look forward to our next chat.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
All right. Well, good night, everybody.